This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today I have with me
Lorraine Holtham.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Lorraine, we've talked about your time at primary school, time at intermediate school, and now we go on to high school. But also, your father was in the First World War, and you were at school, primary school, during the Second World War. So, do you have any perceptions of war and what it might have?
No, I can remember my father following the war news, whatever. There was a family not next door to us in Albert Street, but one across from there, who had a family of boys, and their oldest son was actually killed sometime during the war, but was awarded a medal. And I can remember that at that time, if you went to town, ladies dressed up, they wore costumes, they were called, and hats and gloves and purses, you know, weren't casual like today. And the mother wore that medal on her lapel of her suit.
Oh, that's right. It's all is it the right hand side if it's a relative, right, and the left hand side if it's your mother.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't know that then, but I know that she used to. There was a bus stop at the end of our street in Featherston Street. She would get on the bus, or whoever else was getting on the bus, and she wore that medal always. Had her, but the other sons, I think she might have had five boys. So that was one thing, but I don't recall very much about it. There used to be news flashes, I suppose you'd call them, or whatever, on at the pictures before the main picture started.
Okay.
There would be something that nearly always had something about the troops.
Yeah.
In the Second World War, which would probably be the extent of all I knew.
So you go to the cinema quite?
No, but when we could go to the pictures, it was sixpence to get in. And we were allowed to go sometimes once a week. If there was any spare money, we could go, which we liked to do because there used to be serials on, so you had to watch what was going to happen. Thinking about it today, they were a load of rubbish, but anyway, we thought they were good at the time.
So you had that and the radio, though. The radio.
Well, my father had a radio, yes, and he used to listen. As I said, he would follow things in the weekly news. I don't imagine the Woman's Weekly would have a lot in it about the war, but it might have done, I don't know. But, yes.
And at school it wasn't really mentioned much?
No, I can't sort of think that there was. Anzac Day was always observed in every school. Every school observed Anzac Day, and there might have been possibly, I suppose, the principal would give speeches, and I don't know whether there were flowers. I can't recall that. I can. There was at Terrace End. I can remember that because they used to put them all on the gates that went into the baths.
Oh, that's right. You said there was a Memorial Day when they also flowers or wreaths or
both. That was on Anzac Day. They would do that.
Okay.
Plus the one in town here that was, you know, the cenotaph. They would do that too. I don't know what they did with the wreaths afterwards, because I doubt that there was any graves here at the time in the cemetery. I don't know. You know, I was too young to know about that.
And things like American troops here and so on, you never
Well, we knew that the American troops were here at Paikokoriki. They were stationed down there sometimes. They were stationed there. Whether they came as far up as Palmerston North, I don't know, but the teenage girls, of course, thought they were just marvellous.
Yes.
If they did come to here and my parents knew about it, they wouldn't let my oldest sister go to town. She would have been maybe 16 or 17 at the time. But, you know, the troops were very, very popular.
I've recorded some 16 and 17 year, well, women who were 16 and 17, and they go to all the dances with the Americans, and they thought it was great.
Mavis did too, but she wouldn't...
she wasn't allowed.
No, she wasn't allowed to go to town. She had a girlfriend that lived in the same street as us, and they were very close together, and my sister used to get really annoyed because her friend was allowed to go to the dances, but she wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she couldn't even go to town, you know, because... We had, there used to be a milk bar, which I suppose and I don't know what else they could have gone to. There was the dance hall, which has had several names through the years. I don't know what it was called at that time. May have been the ANA, Army, Navy, Air Force.
Oh, yeah.
Which,
and that was in the centre of town?
No, it was where Harvey Norman is now.
Oh, okay.
But in...
Yeah. That's just... Behind the library.
Street. Well, probably where, where Harvey Norman, the entrance there.
Oh, yes.
They're about there because... what was that one? The Mayfair. The Mayfair Cinema. We used to have five, I think there was, in the town. All went around the square.
And they
were all quite popular. The region and the state were the most popular.
So, but your father had been in the First World War.
That's right. So he was too old for the second one. That's right. But the war years, I get quite interested in them now. Actually, I'm reading a little book at the moment, and it's about when Portsmouth was bombed during the that's where I've got to in the story so far, that it was a bit drastic. So anyway, I don't mind reading about those sort of things, and my brother took my younger sister and myself down to Wellington a couple of years back, I think it would have been, to see the Peter Jackson display. Is it the National Museum? What's the other one called?
Yeah, there's two. There's the Gallipoli one that was in Te Papa.
Yes, that's and the then, big ones, isn't it?
Yeah. And then there's, I think there's one, is it the old museum site that's now the Massey University campus in Wellington that has
I thought this was the National Museum.
Oh, in Te Papa, you mean?
No. You went out and up a hill and round the corner sort of thing.
Okay.
It's big.
I know there's one with a trench in and so on, was it?
Can't remember a trench, but it was a very, very good display. And we were very interested in it because a lot of it was the First World War. And I can remember my brother saying, you know, I wonder if Dad was there when that happened. Because he was in France. So that's about all we know about him, and the fact that he was there and he was wounded.
So was he a fairly sort of remote father for you then, you think? Or
he's not like fathers today. My parents, there was not a lot of affection shown to them, between them, or to us either, and yet it was there. I can remember my father giving my mother a peck on the cheek, but never saw anything more intimate than that. They weren't the type that would hold hands or anything like that. No, they weren't. But if one was, my mother was never sick. She never ever got sick. Didn't have time to get sick, according to her. So she, but if he was sick, you know, or any of us, and she would look after us. Yeah. So
it felt like a warm home.
Yeah, yeah. The caring was there.
Yeah, but just it, not the displays
it,
that you
it
might
well, not like now, not like now, you know, the where it's very open and also with somebody else. We were brought up that we had to call another adult Mr. or Mrs. If they were a very close family member, we were allowed to call them uncle. We had one uncle who wasn't a blood relative, but he was a nice uncle. auntie? No, we never had any aunties. We had no grandparents. We had no cousins.
Because they were further away? Or
well, Dad's parents, well, his mother, of course, had gone. She had passed away. But I used to write to his father when I was possibly intermediate. I can't remember. They were over there, and my mother's parents, she never talked about. She never talked about her childhood at all, and neither did my father, really. He never said anything very much. He had a brother that had died of appendicitis or peritonitis when he was 14. And then there was the brother that was in the Air Force. He had a sister who looked after the father after her mother died. She never married. And my first husband and I were fortunate enough to meet her when we went to England, which was very nice. The sister in Auckland, she has met her many times because she was within New Zealand. And also the sister that's younger than me, she also met her. But we had met her in October, what was it, 1 year? Yeah, October of 1 year, and she died the following January. So it was very brief. So we grew up with no relatives like that at all. Even today, I don't know if I've got any cousins. I must have somewhere, I suppose. But I don't know them. And never knew any uncles or aunties. And when I think of my children, you know, they're all over the place.
But also, I think if a parent comes from a large family, there'd be a big age range as well. I had cousins who were they served in World War II, and I wasn't even born then. You know, you get a big.
Well, this is what I was saying too about my first husband's grandparents. He had his grandmother's last three children were the same age as his mother's first three children. So that this auntie who was born very prematurely was the same age as him. So that was, but that's what they did in those days, apparently.
That was
odd.
Okay. Now, so you stopped your training when you turned 15.
Yes, on my father's insistence, I had to leave school.
And you still resent this?
Yes, I do, really, because I didn't want to leave school.
Okay.
I didn't want to, but I had to. And no, I had to get a job and go out to work. He also did this to the sister, the one that's right next to me, younger than I am, did that to her too. But the youngest sister, by that time, I think my mother rebelled, and she stayed at school until she was 16. My brother, on the other hand, must have been nearly 18 when he left school. He was still at high school at Freiburg. Didn't want to leave, so he stayed there.
Was the family a bit better off then with the extra incomes coming in?
Well, the eldest sister, we weren't in the state house very long when she got married. I can't remember at what time of the year we would have moved into that house, because I think she got married in January. And I know that she wasn't there for very long when she got married, so she was gone. Then the next sister, she and I shared a bedroom. And the next two sisters, they shared a bedroom, and the brother had the single bedroom right at the end. He was in there by himself, of course. Now, Maori went to, my first job was, I think, with an agricultural firm in Rangitiki Street. And my job was to type out invoices, which you did at the time, but I'd also done that sort of thing in the school holidays. My mother used to get these jobs for me, which I didn't mind having, because and I can't remember what the pay was. I probably gave it all to her. But there used to be a flour mills on the corner of Albert Street and Broadway. Albert Street and Broadway. That's where the New World is now, isn't it? And the railway line used to go divert to there. There was also another one off where opposite the Catholic Church. There was one came to there because there was a timber yard there, I think. Anyway, I had a job in the school holidays at the flour mills, and thinking of it now, it must have been the biggest fire trap out. It was, the walls were corrugated iron, the inside was wood, all wood, and these big things that were, anyway, I was in the office, again, typing out invoices. And I quite liked that, I didn't mind it at all. Another time in the school holidays, I worked in Woolworths in Broadway, and my job was in a little room that they had there where they used to bag up sweets, chocolates and sweets, and I was told that I could eat as many chocolates as I liked, because they reckoned that, you know, you'd only get so far and you'd, be sick, so you wouldn't want any more, which was true. So I did that one time, fell down the stairs there, because I had my sister's shoes on, which had a loose heel. Anyway, yes, so I can't remember. Gough, Gough and Hamer, was it, I think? It's not there now. But I worked there for a little while, and then I went to work for this neighbour who lived not quite opposite us on Albert Street, who had an office in the bank building. I think the bank might still be there, but not as it was then, on the corner of Cuba and Rangitiki Street.
Yeah.
It used to be on the left, if you went from this end. Anyway, I worked there for a couple of years, I suppose, and then I got married. I got married very young, much against my mother's. My father was delighted, but my mother wasn't very pleased about it at all. So, yes, so I got married in 1952.
But you would have already had several years out of school by then.
No, only a couple, really. Well,
1952, you were 17.
But at that time, it wasn't uncommon.
Yeah, if people left school at... 14 or
Or, you know, I mean, a lot got married at 16. It wasn't uncommon at all.
Now, also, things like the sorts of things I've heard were that maybe for that period or a bit later, there were so many jobs available. If you want to, you just, if you were tired of school, you just leave school and get a job. And if you didn't like the job, you just walk out and there's another job.
That's right. So, yes, it was so, too, to
so
a degree.
So the idea that you needed an education wasn't so clear.
But I only ever did clerical work.
Yes.
I had never done anything any different to that.
Yeah.
You know, from what I learned when I was at school, I never ever did anything any different.
Nothing.
It was always clerical.
Yeah.
That changed a bit in later years, but mostly it was. Then I also worked on the tote out here at the racecourse, which was sort of affiliated to the the man that I worked for. He had in his employment, there was two men. One was a photographer and the other one was like a, I don't know whether he was an announcer at the races on the race day, but his daughter, his oldest daughter, also worked in the office, and she used to work on the tote, and she said, would I be interested? And I thought, oh, that sounded quite interesting. It was a bit of a challenge. Yes, I'd go. So I did. And at that time, race days were only over Christmas and anniversary weekend here. But there were other meetings at Fielding, at Woodville, Foxton, you know, all the little places. Terenikau was one. I think that was the furthest I ever went. And I really liked it. Anyway, did that all through the years as well. And then they brought in secondary tax. Mm. And by this time, my oldest daughter was old enough to be able to do that.
Oh, so you're going sometime later now. This is
this is getting on a bit. But I mean, I first started it in about 1952 or 53.
Yeah.
I first started doing it.
Yeah.
And the old machines were a swivel thing that, I don't know if you know what they're like, do you?
I know.
It was like a big wheel, and it had all the numbers from 1 to 24, because that's how many horses would be in a race. So you would swing this thing around to whatever number. If somebody came up and they wanted number 10, each way was for a win and a place.
Mm-hmm.
So you pulled it this way for a win and put it back that way for a place and gave them their tickets.
Yeah.
Well, I liked that. It was as easy as anything, and it was interesting.
Yeah.
Never watched the races. The races have never interested me.
Mm-hmm.
But as the years went by and my daughter was old enough to go, at that time, they decided to change the system, and it became computerised.
Oh, yeah.
So you had to have training for it, had to be trained to do it, and as I said, they bought in the secondary tax business. So I found that I was actually working those days for nothing, because I had to pay back in tax.
Mm.
But she was all right. She kept on doing it for quite a few years, but I gave it away. I didn't do it anymore. Yeah.
Now, from my recollection of what I'd heard, certainly in the UK, if you got a largish family, it was very common. The oldest children, of course, they have to go straight out to work. But the younger children in the family, perhaps by that stage, the family can afford them to have more education. Was that?
Well, I think that was the thing. And yet none of us had the opportunity to go to university. We just weren't allowed to do it. You know, if I'd wanted to go to university, I couldn't have. For one thing, they couldn't afford it. And yet, we've all done all right.
Yes.
You know.
Well, it wasn't the same sort of requirement as it would be today, I think.
Well, my brother became a building inspector. My younger sister had her own business, two businesses actually. And she was an air hostess for many years.
Yeah.
Met her husband, who was born and brought up in Palmerston North, met him in Germany, which was odd.
Yeah.
Plus the fact that his youngest brother was in the same class as me at Terrace End School.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the world's a funny place.
Yeah. Well, I had aunts who were working age by the time of the Depression, and many of them, they had their own businesses or careers, and, you know, not with a lot of education, but those opportunities were there for them. It was more social, what did you choose, and so there wasn't strong social pressure to stop them doing that.
Yes, well, I think, you know, if you've got the drive, I suppose it would be, the ambition to do something, you can do it. I mean, my younger sister has got a very sharp mind. Mine seems to be slipping lately. But she's very good, and she worked her way up with different sort of business things that she did. Started off at home, made her children's clothes, so did I. You know, and you did that sort of thing.
Yeah.
These days, the young ones, you know, they don't want to do any dressmaking.
Yeah.
My brother is very, very good at anything. He made this.
Oh, a metal pen holder.
Yes, and different other things that he's given me over the years, odds and ends, because it's something he likes playing around with.
Yeah.
But he's very, very good at... He's a very good handyman, too, at doing things. And I think that men back in that era were, because they had to be.
Yeah.
You know, and they could do it.
Well, I think even in those days, say you have a car, there's a lot you could do to maintain it, and a lot needed to be done quite often.
Yes.
Now it's much harder and much more of a technical thing, and even getting the parts you need can be...
I can remember Jim saying about one of his brothers. He was the oldest in his family, but
And Jim's your second husband.
Second husband, yes. Was saying about one of his brothers was probably dyslexic, which, of course, was not a recognised condition at that time, and he said he was terrible at school, couldn't do anything. But as an adult, he could strip down a car engine, have all the parts lying around all over the place, and put it all together again. Mm. He's very, very good with any machinery.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it depends, I suppose, on what interests you, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's lucky. I did hear a story of one guy. His parents were really impressed when he was very young, and he got the family clock and completely took it to pieces, and they thought, oh, he must be really bright, but he couldn't put it back together again.
Yeah, well, Ted could do this. We were coming home from Levin one night. We had a van at the time. This is Jim and myself. We're coming home, and as we were approaching Shannon, which is where Ted lived, the lights in the van went out. And Jim was not mechanically minded at all. So anyway, he cruised along very carefully until we got to Ted's place and pulled in there and said, can you have a look at the van? He said, because the lights have gone out. He said, and I don't know what to do. I don't know what's the matter with it. Ted said, oh, you better stay here tonight. I'll have a look in the morning in the daylight. Had a look, and I don't know whether a wire had come loose or whatever. It was something very, very simple.
Yeah.
And he fixed it straight away, and off we went. Didn't need the lights in, did we?
So, now, have you ever thought, though, if you'd stayed on at school, what would you have wanted to do?
I'm not sure. The only thing I can remember, this has just come to mind, actually. Had I wanted to stay at school, my father wanted me to be a school teacher. And the thought of being a school teacher gave me the shudders. I didn't really, that didn't appeal to me in the slightest. Never has, ever. Yeah. I've never thought, oh, I wish I'd become a school teacher. Mm. I'd never wanted to be.
Yeah.
But
a nurse?
Yeah, that was the other thing. Mm. And I didn't fancy that either. But that was the thing at the time. Apparently, a few hundred years, maybe a couple of hundred years ago, that, you know, if you were a female and you wanted to work, well, you only did. You became a governess or you became a nurse.
Mm.
Not for me, no. That didn't appeal to me at all. I don't know.
Well, things in farming, women were active in, if there was a family farm, they'd be doing things, wouldn't they?
Well, you see, we never...
But you weren't farming, yes.
No, we weren't farming.
And then I suppose in retail or hospitality, there'd be jobs.
I have done retail, and I did not like it. I did retail for about 18 months, I suppose, in a shop.
Yeah.
I did not like it at all.
Yeah.
Didn't like it.
Yeah. There was hairdressing, there was dental nurse.
Well, I wouldn't like that.
I wouldn't want any of that.
No, but I can do hairdressing.
Yeah,
I can do that. Not that I've ever been trained, but I can do that.
Yeah.
So that's just something I picked up along the way.
Yeah.
I had a neighbour that I used to do her hair and her children's hair, did I tell you?
No.
Ah, well, she lived not next door, but next door to that, and she had five children. She had a girl and four boys, and like us, like everybody at the time, never had very much money. So I offered to cut her hair. So I used to cut her hair, didn't do her husband's, but I used to do her hair and her children's hair, all of them, the whole lot. Anyway, she got a job in a fish and chip shop. Serving, and she came and said one day, oh, one of the customers said, gosh, your hair looks nice, where do you get it done? And she said, oh, my neighbour does it for me, why should I go to a salon and pay for it when I can get it done for nothing? And that was the last time I ever cut her hair, or the children. I never ever did it again.
Yeah.
I thought, well, you know, if you're going to I mean, I never. So she never paid me, but I
she
never.
She didn't reciprocate in any way.
No. I never expected her to. Yeah. I mean, I used to do mine, so yeah, I'd do yeah. my husband's, yeah. both husbands, mm.
yeah.
and my children's, and some of the relatives, the brothers-in-law. Yeah. I would do.
Yeah.
My mother's here, but no, I never expected anything from her. I just thought, well, she's as hard up as we are.
Yeah.
I don't mind helping her out.
Yeah.
But when she said that,
yeah,
when she said that, I thought, no, that's it. I'm not going to do that anymore.
Yeah.
So I didn't.
Yeah.
She can jump on the lake.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz. Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.